Good evening.
Good evening. I didn't know if anybody was there.
If you don't hear music, then somebody's there.
Well, it said no. I was the first caller, so that's why, you know.
Yeah, we both got the same message. We were, our timing was probably the same.
Yes. Yeah.
We're just waiting for someone else.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good, Hanok. I'm doing good. Thank you.
This country isn't. A lot of things going wrong.
Yes. We have a weather alert down here about the tropical storm. By this weekend, we'll find out 90% chance of forming down here, hurricane. So we're watching that besides watching everything else going on.
I hear you. It's really crazy.
Well, with the COVID, that's what I said. It's there's so many fronts, from the COVID to that, and then watching the Gulf. It's like there's so many fronts,
I hear you.
And then we know that God's in control,
No question.
He hasn't been anywhere. He's where, he's at where he's always been, running the world.
Correct.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Hi.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa.
Okay, let me mute.
Anabakoa, Gedula Chimincha, Tati. Aleph Bet Gimel Yitzhak Sadi Kabel Rinat Amchasag Benu Taharedu No Ra Ufreshayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Givavat Shamreim Nun Gimel Dalad Yud Kashin Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sid Katcha Tamid Gamleim Betet Resh Tzaditak Gimel Chasin Kadosh Bero Tuvcha Nael Adata Bet Kufet Nunayim Yachid Be'e Lamcha Pene Zokre Kiddushata Yud Gimelamet Pezayim Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushmati akatenu yodea talumo Shinkufav Dadiuta. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. We will now separate between the right column energy and the left column energy of this creation, utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rachum V'Chanun, Erech Apayim, V'Rav Chesed V'Emet, Notzer Chesed La'alafim, Noseyaon Wafesha, V'Chata'a V'Nakei. We will now connect to the energy of certainty, utilizing the verse from the Sulam commentary on the Zohar, from Parasha Yitro, Pasuk 29, after we say Elushem Yehud. Elushem Yehud kut shabarichu ishkinte bibhilu urchimu. Urchimu udhilu liakta Elushem yudhe bavavhe. Beyehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. Lasok Torah mitzvah. Vayino amadunai Elohinu aleinu maasei yadenu kunenei aleinu maasei yadenu kunenehu. Pasuk 29. Rabbi Abba Amar Bekama Atar Tanenan Dekucha Rihu Koma Diavet Leela Witata Kola Ihu Kishot Biovada Dikshot Beleid Lach Bila Bialma Divae Barnash Vedach Yaleya Nineya Ulan Haga Veya Kalana Dehakuru Ovada Dikshot Inun Wipola Itzderik Bealma. The energy of our current year, the year 5780, as a revealed energy of compensation and a concealed energy of Shefa, and the way we reveal the Shefa and connect it to the compensation is by studying a verse from the Tanakh that connects to both energies. Today we will study Ezekiel chapter 23, verse 36. Vayomer Hashem Elai ben Adam Atishpot et ahala et ahaliva Vahageid lachem et toavotechem. Hashem said, moreover unto me, son of man, wilt thou judge Ohola and Oholiba, then declare unto them their abominations? The energy of the year 5774 is peace in the Middle East. We study one verse from the Tanakh that connects to this energy. It's from 2 Samuel chapter 7, verses 10. Wisamti makom le'ami li'Yisrael undati v'shakan Tavka v'lo yirgaz od v'lo yosifu v'nei avla le'anoto. We will now connect to the 72 names of God, utilizing the tool of saying each letter with its root vowel out loud in sequence. Wahe wayo layo sayote alame. Mehe shi la la he aka aka heta eza yo ala wada wala awa he hea yoza la me be he re yo he ko me la awa ka la yo la wa wa pe he la nu la ha yo 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 me la he hey hey wa nu ta hey hey a do re ta shi a hey re yo yo a wa me la ka be wa shi re yo hey wa la hey hey ka wa ko me nu da anu yo hey a me hey hey ah yo yo da hey 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 me yo ha wa wa la yo la hey sa ala la yime yo hey wa he wa danu yo hey he shi ame me nu nu a nu yo ta me be he pe wa yo nu me me yo yo la he re he me ta re wa me be yo he he la nu wa me he yo ta me be me nu ko a yo a he pe wa re a he yo be me he yo yo me wa me. Now we will connect to the 72 names revealed by the Tzaddikim utilizing the same tool. Wa 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 yo 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 sa be te a a me me be shi la yo he anu a ka me ta he he yo anu da la he wa he me ha yo ta la me re he yo he yo yo me he me me. La wa wa ka be yo lo la yo he wa pe nu la nu me ha yo re he yo me nu he te he wa nu yo he he shi a yo re ta shi a he re la yo wa wa me la yo be wa he re yo yo wa la he he ka a ko me nu da anu yo he wa me re he a yo he za he shi he me ka ha wa wa la yo yo he sa a la a re yo a la me ta he wa he wa da la yo he yo shi a la me nu he a nu wa ta me la he pe a yo nu ko me yo re la he be he pe za yo re wa he be yo a he a la wa me za yo da he be me ka ko a la a he he wa re la he yo yo me he la yo me he me. The Tzaddikim who chose to leave this day, the 10th of Sivan, Rabbi Elazar Rokeach, Ben Rabbi Shmuel Shmelki, Rabbi Moshe of Rozvado, Rabbi Yishmael HaKohen, Rabbi Ezra Harari Rafu, and the 8th verse of the Ana B'Koach, we say in a whisper. Today's class is an essay by the Ari. If you go to the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in row 14, the second column from the left, you will find a landing page, a link to a landing page for the writings of the Ari. When the landing page is opened up, please scroll down to the parasha of Baha'alotcha. I need to explain a little bit, because you're going to find some confusion. Why am I reading from the Parsha of Baha'alotcha when this coming Saturday in the diaspora, we're not going to be reading from Baha'alotcha, we're going to be reading from Naso. And the reason being that the second day of Shavuot was on Shabbat. So the reading in Israel, which only keeps one day, was for the parasha of Naso. But we live in the diaspora, so why am I keeping to the parasha of the what's happening in Israel? The explanation for that has to do with the consciousness change. Yes, we are in the diaspora. But we also have people in who are living in the diaspora who are connecting to the internal energy of Israel. And so it would be easy for me to stay with Nassau. But my thinking is on some things we will connect, like the Ari's writings, to the internal energy of Israel. And in other things, we will stay connected to the diaspora. And this will go on for a few weeks. But eventually, they come back together. So the Ari's writing on who is Rabbi Isaac Luria, scroll down to the Parsha of Bahalotcha and open up the link to the, this essay called, titled, Meriting the Land of Israel. We will start with the L'shem Yehud, and then we will begin our class. L'shem Yehud Kudsha Barichu Ishkinte Bidhilu Urchimu Udhilu Udhilu Urchimu Leakta L'shem Yudhe Bovavhe Beyehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Ayehino Amadonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Konenei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Konenei. Meriting the Land of Israel. Kabbalah discusses the mystical reasons that Moses did not enter the Holy Land. Towards the end of this parasha, Bahalotcha, we are told how God bestowed the gift of prophecy on the 70 elders. At that time, Miriam was standing next to Moses' wife, Zipporah, when Gershom ran to Moses saying, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. When Zipporah heard these words, she said, woe to their wives if they have become prophets, for they will now separate from them, just as Moses has separated from me. Miriam overheard this and assumed that Moses had done this because he felt it was inappropriate for a prophet to become defiled by marital relations. Just as Hashem had bidden the whole people to refrain from marital relations in preparation for the revelation of the giving of the Torah. This consciousness was not correct. However, she also knew that she and her brother Aaron had received prophetic revelations and had not been required to separate from their spouses. So she assumed that it was Moses' own idea to separate and thought that this was unfair to Zipporah. Miriam later told Aaron about this. And Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses regarding how he was treating Zipporah. The Torah describes this as follows. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses regarding the Cushite woman he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. They said, has God spoken only to Moses? Has he not spoken to us also? The land of Israel is the earthly manifestation of the woman of valor. Zipporah is here referred to as the Cushite woman because her physical beauty was as incontestable as the darkness of the skin of a Cushite woman. And in addition, her deeds were also as faultless as a Cushite woman is black. The absoluteness of her character contrasts with the way he was mistreating her, at least in Miriam's and Aaron's eyes. However, the Torah refers to Moses' wife as the Cushite woman for another reason as well. My master, the Arizal, of blessed memory, told me that he heard from a great sage in our generation by the name of Rabbi Kolonimos, of blessed memory, an explanation of this passage of the Torah as follows. We have seen how Patriarch Jacob's body and skeleton were both buried in the land of Israel. The body here refers to the flesh. Joseph's bones were buried in the land of Israel, but not his body. He was buried in Egypt. His body had decomposed by the time his bones were taken out of Egypt. They were buried in Shechem. Neither Moses' body or bones were buried in the land of Israel. The reason for this is that the land of Israel is the earthly manifestation of the woman of valor who fears God. A verse from Proverbs. The phrase fears God can also be read the fear or awe of God. Thus, mystically, the woman of valor, the Nukva of Zeranpin, is also the lower level of the fear of God, the aspect of our relationship with God associated with the Sephirah of Malchut. Because Jacob did not marry Timna, the sister of Lotan, as our sages relate, he merited to have both his body and skeleton buried in the land of Israel. In giving the genealogy of Esav and the history of his progeny, the Torah also describes the people who originally inhabited the land he eventually possessed, the Chorites. These are the sons of Zeir, the Chorite, the original inhabitants of the land: Lotan, Shoval, Tzvion, Anna, Dishon, Ezer, and Dishan. These were the tribal chiefs of the Chorites among the sons of Zeir in the land of Edom. The sons of Lotan were Hori and Heman, and Lotan's sister was Timna. The reason the Torah tells us who Lotan's sister was is because she wanted to convert to Judaism, but neither Abraham, Isaac, nor Jacob would accept her. She even offered to be Jacob's concubine, but Jacob refused her. She then declared, "I would rather be a concubine to anyone from this nation, a descendant of Abraham, than a princess in another nation," and indeed became Esav's son's concubine. Timna was a concubine of Esav's son Eliphaz, and she bore Amalek to Eliphaz. Regarding Joseph, he did sin in thought, and drops of his semen issued from between his fingernails. But he did not complete the evil act by injecting his seed into that foreign woman. Therefore, his skeleton was buried in the land of Israel, but not his body. Joseph sold as a slave to Potiphar, the priest of On, in Egypt. Potiphar's wife tried to seduce Joseph, and although he initially demurred, he eventually agreed. As he was about to complete the illicit act of relations, the image of his father suddenly became fixed in his mind, and he relented. He dug his fingernails into the ground in order to control himself, and miraculously the flow of semen issued from his fingers into the ground instead of issuing into Potiphar's wife. Regarding Moses, he went to the land of Cush and lived there for 40 years and actually married the wife of the slain Ethiopian king. and lived with her outwardly as man and wife, as is recounted in the accounts of Moses' life. Even though he did not approach her physically, he was still not buried in the land of Israel at all, neither his body nor his bones. I am adding, righteous people do not decay. Either the body nor the bones decays. Joseph is righteous, so why did his body decay? Perhaps the embalming process that was done in Egypt is the cause. The land of Canaan is associated with the moon. The written Torah does not tell us what happened to Moses between the time when he fled Pharaoh's henchmen at about the age of 18 and when he became Jethro's shepherd and son-in-law at about the age of 77. There are a few versions in the Midrashim of what happened, but according to the most detailed one, Moses slew the Egyptian in the year 2386 when he was 18 years old. He fled to Ethiopia, where he joined the army and 9 years later was coronated king. This is when he married the widow of the previous king of Ethiopia, or Cush. He remained king of Ethiopia for 40 years, from 2395 to 2435. In that year, at the age of 67, he left Ethiopia and went to Midian. After the incident with the shepherds at the well, Jethro imprisoned Moses for 10 years. Zipporah fed Moses secretly during these 10 years and finally convinced her father to release him. In 2445, at the age of 77, Moses and Zipporah were married and shortly after had their first son, Gershon. The incident of the burning bush occurred in the year 2447, when Moses was 79 years old. Thus far are the words of the said sage, Rabbi Colonius, of blessed memory. To this, my master added an explanation of this passage regarding Miriam's accusation of Moses as follows. It is stated prior to this passage that Eldad and Medad were prophesying in the camp. Our sages teach us that they were prophesying that Moses will die in the desert and Joshua will bring Israel into the land of Canaan. Following this, Miriam and Aaron spoke about this matter and were discussing why Moses should die in the desert before being able to enter the land. It could not yet have been clear to them that the reason for this was Moses' sin with regard to bringing forth water from the rock. For this incident did not occur until 37 years later, after Miriam's death, as recounted in Parashat Hukat. They therefore concluded that the reason must be that Moses fully and legally married a Cushite woman, and therefore he was barred from entering the land, similar to what the above-quoted sage had said. Having said this, they then proceeded to rule out another explanation for why Moses would not enter the land of Israel. Namely, as it is written in the Zohar, the land of Canaan is associated with the moon. Therefore, Joshua, about whom our sages said, Joshua's face was like the face of the moon, relative to Moses' face, which was like the face of the sun. Joshua entered the land. Moses, in contrast, whose face was like the face of the sun, which expresses a higher level of spirituality than the moon, did not enter it. The sun and moon are associated with Zerunpin and Nukpa, respectively. Zerunpin shines with the radiance of the emotional Sephirot, which are reflected in the Nukpa, their means of expression. This is similar to the way the moon reflects the light of the sun. Similarly, Joshua's spirituality, evidenced as the glow of his face, was a reflection of his teacher Moshe. The land of Israel, the quintessential land, is also associated with Malchut. Inasmuch as heaven and earth are also respectively associated with Zerunpin and the Nukva, it thus would appear that Moses did not enter the land of Israel because he was of a higher spiritual order than the land. Only his disciple, who was of a lower spiritual order, was, quote-unquote, low enough to enter it. The tree of life and the tree of knowledge are respectively associated with Zerunpin and the Nukva. It would follow that Moses' denial of entry into the land was to his credit, rather than the result of some lack on his part. Aaron and Miriam ruled out this explanation by saying, has God spoken only to Moses? Has he not spoken to us also? Meaning, we are on the same level of prophecy as he is. If so, why are we going to enter the land and he not? Rather, it must not be because of his preeminence, but because of some lacking of his that he is not entering the land. Namely, because he married a Cushite woman, etc., as we have explained. They did not know at this point that they too would not be entering the land of Israel. God then told them that the reason Moses would not be entering the land was indeed because of his preeminence, in accordance with the explanation given in the Zohar. As for their argument that has he not spoken to us also, God told them that it was a faulty argument. For if there be a prophet among you, I, God, will make myself known to him in a vision. I will speak to him in a dream. This is not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful throughout my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, unambiguously, without riddles. So he beholds the image of God. So why were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses? In other words, he alone is the face of the sun, and therefore will not enter the land, which is referred to mystically as the holy moon. Although Aaron and Miriam were correct that their level of prophecy was higher than Joshua's, it was still not on the level of Moses. This is similar to the mystical explanation given in the Zohar of Moses' words in the verse, is there a tree there or not? When Moses sent spies to report to the land, he told them to see what kind of land it is and the people who inhabit it. Are they strong or weak? Are there few or many? And what of the land they inhabit? Is it good or bad? And what of the cities they live in? Are they in open cities or in fortresses? What is the soil like? Is it rich or poor? Are there any trees in it or not? The latter phase literally reads, is there a singular tree in it or not? Meaning, if the tree of life, which is Tiferet, known as the sun, is there, I shall enter it. If not, I will not. The tree of life and the tree of knowledge are respectively associated with Zerunpin and the Nukva. It follows from the above that the Arizal, based on the Zohar, holds that it was not because Moses formally married the widow of the Cushite king that he was denied entrance into the land of Israel, but because he was essentially above its level. He puts Rabbi Kolonimus' interpretation into the mouths of Miriam and Aaron as their supposition that God then refuted. This is the essay by the Ari, but then Rabbi Shmuel Vital, the son of Rabbi Chaim Vital, notes that after Timna became Eliphaz's concubine, she bore him Amalek, the ancestor of the nation that became Israel's arch enemy. The stages state that this was because Jacob, in fact, should have married her. He could have elevated the good in her, evinced by her desire to convert, and thereby nullified the bad in her that became manifest later in Amalek. Thus, from our sages' word, it appears that Jacob erred by not accepting Timna, while in Rabbi Kolomnius' exposition, it appears that he was rewarded for repelling her. This inner Amalek derives from our reluctance to answer the challenge. He resolves this dichotomy by proposing that it would have indeed been preferable for Jacob to marry Timna, even if by doing so he would have forfeited his ability to be buried in the land of Israel. By preventing the emergence of Amalek, he would have saved his descendants from much suffering and removed an obstacle in the way of the redemption. One of the conditions that must be met before the redemption can occur is that Amalek's descendants must be wiped out. Not being buried in the land of Israel would be a small price to pay for this, especially since Moses himself was not buried in the land of Israel. And our sages say that this was in order that he be able to bring the generation that died in the desert to the final redemption with him. If this is true, its psychological implications are far-reaching. We are taught that Amalek signifies the coldness in our relationship with Hashem that comes from doubts that the inner skeptic plants in our mind, and the above exposition implies that the inner Amalek derives from our reluctance to answer the challenge of absorbing and elevating the good elements of materiality and foreign culture out of the fear of the contamination it will entail. These unredeemed elements of non-Jewish culture later come back to haunt us in the form of doubts and the cultured sophistication that cools off our enthusiasm for holiness. This is an unwritten commentary, but this is part of the arguments between Orthodoxy and the Reform movement. Orthodox says we should not include these foreign elements that come from a level of less holiness. Whereas the Reform movement is saying, along with this argument from Shmuel Vital, that we do need to risk elevating the sparks that have fallen into other realms that we would not normally have access to. We need to bring them into the children of Israel frame of reference so they can be elevated properly. continuing to read. So what is better, to insist on ascetic purity of mind, ascetic purity of soul, and ascetic purity of body, as Jacob did, or to sacrifice purity in order to elevate the non-Jewish world and thereby avoid the doubts and indifference of Amalek? We could propose that Chassidut would answer that Jacob could not have allowed himself the risk of elevating alien culture, because the Torah, with its solid anchoring in holy lifestyle and consciousness, had not yet been given. Moses, on the other hand, who represented the giving of the Torah, could allow himself this risk. And this is what Chassidut teaches. But we have to remember the translator was a student of Chassidus. Does that mean that he is correct and that Chassidut is correct? That is something for each student to decide for themselves. Continuing to read. The lesson for us would then be that only to the extent that we are solidly grounded and immersed in the holiness of the Torah and its ways can we allow ourselves the broad-mindedness to absorb, to include, and to elevate the elements of worldly culture that can be, and indeed beg to be, assimilated. If we do not trust the power of the fire of the Torah to burn off the dross of this unrefined raw material, these elements will eventually plague us as seeds of doubt and as a cold-hearted attitude in all things holy. That is the end of our class for today. Does anyone have any questions or comments? While you're unmuting yourself, I'll remind you that tomorrow we have three classes. Our 11 o'clock class will be continuing our study of the book, The Sefer Joshua. Our 4:30 class will be continuing our deeper Zohar class. In our 7 o'clock class, we will be connecting once again, although it's been quite a while, on the Tikkuni Zohar. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes, I have one, Hanok.
Go ahead.
Can you expand a little bit about the when you related to the skeleton being buried in the land, but the body wasn't?
Well, Joseph was buried in water. They took his coffin. They took his body. They embalmed him while he was in Egypt, right after he died. Both he and Jacob received that embalming. He was then buried into a coffin, and that coffin was dropped into the River Nile. And only one person knew of its location. When Moses had been assigned the task of redeeming the children of Israel, he undertook the task of elevating the coffin of Joseph. And so they carried this coffin for 40 years in the desert. This was the reason why we have a second Pesach, because the people who were carrying his coffin, they were being made impure by the fact that his body was dead. Now they bring him into the land of Israel, but they're saying that his body decayed between the 40 years and the walking in the desert and the how many years, 100 plus years, that he was in the Nile River while the children of Israel were in slavery. And so their explanation, which is not based on Kabbalah, is saying his body deteriorated, but his bones didn't. But in Kabbalah, we're taught that a righteous person's body does not decay. So if that's true, and it is true, it's been proven, physically it's been proven, righteous people's bodies do not decay, then my comment and my question is, why isn't his body buried in the land of Israel if he is truly righteous? And that is the question that I'm raising. And as we read this, I would have written the comment slightly differently, because I would have raised the aspect, what this essay is saying, that by spilling seed into the ground, that organ and anything else that would be part of his body associated with that wasting of seed was not righteous, not completely righteous. He was righteous because he withheld and resisted the compulsion of the body to lie with Potiphar's wife. But there were some seeds that fell to the ground, as explained in this essay. And so the organ that the seed expelled from, the fingers that touched the seed, all of this would have decayed because it wasn't strictly righteous. Therefore, maybe most of his body was still intact, but these few organs were not. And rather than allow him to rise at the time of the resurrection in the land of Israel, being shown to be righteous but not completely righteous, that might be why those organs decayed and why they would not want to embarrass. The Torah would not want to embarrass Joseph by describing that. These are different thoughts that I have had. There's no truth to them. There may be truth to them. These are things for you to evaluate for yourself. And I hope I have clarified what you were confused by.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. I knew there was something to it. Appreciate it.
Are there any other questions or comments? Shalom Gadol to everyone. Have a beautiful evening.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.